morning, everyone. Today is Friday, December 13th, 2024. The time is 9:15 a.m. And now call a meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. Commissioner McCormick and Commissioner Warren both have contacted me and have indicated they will not be able to attend today's meeting due to scheduling conflicts. They have requested that their absences be excused. In accordance with the Finance Code 11.103, the commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor of excusing the absences, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed, say nay. Ayes have it, and the absences are excused. At this time, Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez will do a roll call for us.
All right. Philip Holt?
Present.
Bob Borkow?
Present.
Hector Cerna?
Present.
Kathleen Fields?
Present.
Marty Green?
Present.
Troy Lambden?
Present.
Shane McCormick is out. Rosie Morris?
Here.
David Osborne?
Present.
Miguel Romano?
Present.
And Laura Warren is out.
Thank you. Members will now move on to the Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of public comment, please fill out a witness form, affidavit form, and bring it up to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes, and agenda items are to 10 minutes. Any comments related to a rule may be made at this time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items to the final rule adoption except upon the majority vote of the commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes only. Do we have any members of the audience wishing to make a general comment today? Seeing none, we will move on now to consent agenda items A1, C2, and D2 in a single vote. I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. Therefore, do I hear a motion to adopt consent agenda items A1, C2, and D2 without any further discussion?
Marty Green, so moved.
Second.
Kathleen Fields, second.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. We'll now move on to item 4, Finance Commission Operations. Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes, thank you. Just for a briefing, Commissioner Cooper had a family emergency he had to leave to, so I'm stepping in for it. The one item that we did want to bring up and just remind all members is that the 89th legislative session will begin in January. Each agency will be providing information on legislation that they are tracking, and I believe each agency will have a small briefing within their own sections. But dates of importance for everyone. The first date of the session will be January the 14th, which is a Tuesday. And the last day will be March 14th for any filings of a new bill. And the official last day of the regular session will be June 2nd. So take special notes. If you don't have your hotel rooms, please make sure you book them because it's going to be real hard to find room. Committees are typically going to be assigned in late January, so you will probably receive information on that as well from the agencies. Just some general statistics. Pre-filing started November 12th, and in pre-filing, we had approximately 1,500 bills filed on that first day, which is about 600 bills more than last year or the last session. Currently, there have been 2,046 bills filed already. The legislative session, the 88th, there was 8,300 bills filed, a little over of that, so we're on a good pace. 15% of those bills from the last session were passed, and the last session also saw about a 17% increase over the bills filed from the previous session before that. So we expect this trend to continue with a total number of be approximately 10,000 bills filed for this session. So we're going to have a lot of reading to do. And the only other thing to add to this is that the finance agencies will be providing weekly reports to all the Finance Commission members. The first report will be received January 21st, which is a Tuesday, and all other reports will be received on Mondays. So every Monday throughout the session, you will receive a report. The bills will be of interest of the Finance Commission members, anything affecting the members themselves, or also anything that would require rules to be considered during and after the session if bills are engrossed. So any additional questions that anyone may have on that? Okay, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Members, we'll now move on to item number 5, the Audit Committee Report. Chairman Fields.
Thank you. The audit committee would like to make a motion that the finance commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2025 internal auditor's risk assessment and audit plan.
Coming upon the recommendation from the audit committee, no second is needed. Members, we have any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, motion passes.
Item 5B was a report on the activities of the Texas Financial Endowment Fund, and a vote is not required. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we'll now move on to items 6 through 10. Do any of the commissioners need anything to be discussed in this open session?
No, sir.
Now we'll be moving on to Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Redda.
All right, thank you very much, Chairman. Report begins on page 17. We'll start with the Thrift Regulation Division activities. At this point, as of the end of September, the last time we reported, we had June numbers, so now we have September. We had 20 state savings banks with assets totaling just over $316 billion. 70% of the banks were well-rated. We have three informal, one formal supervisory action in place, and all those working very closely with those management teams and boards to address any issues that have been recognized or realized. At the bottom, we make reference to the quarterly offsite reviews we have and the targeted visitations. And then we move into the metrics that we look at. The first one we look at is on the next page, on page 18, with respect to capital. We present the data here that shows in terms of the capital ratios that follow the total risk-based capital ratio and tier one leverage ratio, that the industry is stable and strong. We move into earnings, and if you look at earnings, the net interest or profit margin is 3.52, and the non-performing asset levels remain low at 0.17% of total assets. So again, stable and consistent. In terms of market risk, which is exposure to changing interest rates, you can look on page 19, and we show that it actually has decreased just a bit, the ratio of long-term assets to total assets. And then the liquidity risk, which is a bigger issue than it was 2 years ago, but the liquidity risk, again, we're looking at something that is stable in terms of all the state savings benefit, and the loan-deposit ratio remains strong as well. In terms of the thrift examination activity, we're staying current on all the on-site examinations that have been conducted or are being conducted this year, so we are on target to be able to fulfill that, what we had expected. And then I will note that in terms of outreach, that Deputy Commissioner Stephanie Trotty spoke at the IPAD Women in Banking Conference that occurred in October. We move now then to the Mortgage Regulation Division activities, which begins on page 20, but really on page 21 and 22, you see the charts that reflect the historical and current information with respect to entity licenses, branch licenses, and individual licenses as well. The commentary is on page 22 that references the licensing activity. The mortgage licensing section between September 1st and the end of October processed 1,578 applications and approved 1,323 of those. With respect to the mortgage examination activity report, the mortgage examination section, they issued 50 mortgage origination examinations covering 628 individual licenses. That is slightly below, just over 12% below last year in the number of overall examinations, but the number of individual licenses that are reviewed during those examinations were up just slightly. We also accepted two multi-state mortgage committee servicing examinations. We expect that the number of issued examinations, while it is below target for the first quarter, we spent a fair amount of time, as I'll comment later, the team spare a fair amount of time in terms of in-person examiner training and then the holidays too, that are a minor but a disruption to being able to work at a consistent level. In terms of outreach and training, which is on page 23, I wanted to note that we had two license and permit specialists, Mary Cruz Reuter and LaShondra Houston, who received their certified application specialist level 2 designations from the CSBS. So we're always pleased when we have our staff members who dedicate themselves to improving and getting the certifications, improving their skill level. And then on the bottom of that page, of page 23, you'll see that we did hold on November 4th, the 12th Annual Mortgage Industry Seminar and went through examination findings in detail, and then licensing updates, licensing challenges that are out there. And then the new rules update, Director of Mortgage Regulation William Hurst went through all of those since that had been approved earlier this year by the Finance Commission. I'll move now then to the Operations Division activities on page 24. And there we did submit the department's fiscal year 2022 expenditures to the State Office of Risk Management. And then in terms of accounting, we're closing the first quarter of fiscal 2025. On audits, we did report on the audits earlier, and then I think you're familiar with where we are with respect to the audits that we went through. And then in terms of human resources, not a lot of activities. You can see we have about 63, or as of the date that this was prepared, 63 regular full-time employees. We only had two voluntary resignations, so that table looks a bit odd. It's a solid color, but it's accurate in terms of that. I would say that at the bottom of page 25, we state that we have no new hires or separations since last reported. However, I would comment that we have two people that we have hired, contracted to hire. One will begin on Monday. That is the accountant. And then that's listed in the vacancy status there on page 26. And then the program specialist two, both of those, the program specialist two will start the first of the year, and the accountant will start next Monday. The other thing that's notable is that the CAPS recruit implementation is moving along very quickly. We have a planned go live in January, and we're right now going through some of the testing on that, and it seems to be something that we think will make a significant difference in our being able to recruit effectively. At the bottom of that page, page 26, we start from the legal division activities, and I'll comment on that. We did receive in September, October, received 156 complaints, which is down almost 21% from last year. And I think we're all accustomed to seeing that when you look at the complaints received by respondent type and by violation type, that they remain the prominent ones. Loan servicing and mortgage bankers remain the same. As for open complaints, we had 26 open complaint files, and complaint aging is acceptable with 92% of complaints aged 120 days or less. Closed complaints, 192 complaints were closed in September and October. Data for the first quarter will be provided at the next or the February Finance Commission meeting. And the same goes for recovery claims. We have report here that we received one recovery claim application, but we'll report that information at the February meeting for the first quarter. Normally, I would ask General Counsel Ian Berry, but the report is short on this, so I'll just move forward through this. In terms of SOA, right now, Savings and Mortgage Lending does not have any cases pending at SOA, and we received 22 public information requests that we responded to. The detail on the gift reporting is there on page 29, and then as Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez already mentioned, the 89th legislation that we note on here will convene on January 14th. She provided updated information on the bills that have been filed. And I'm available to answer any questions with respect to the report.
Members, do we have any questions for Commissioner Redda this morning?
Not a question. I do have a comment that I did attend the mortgage industry seminar and thought your team did an excellent job, and it was well received by the industry people who were in attendance. So thank you for doing that.
All right. I do have one other thing. We did put each of your sites the 2024 report on mortgage lending in Texas. This was compiled principally by Director of Mortgage Regulation, William Hurst, and I think it's of course required, but I think you will look at the report and find that it is a very comprehensive report in terms of not only the information, but very descriptive as well. It actually can serve as a primer. If you want to see what mortgage lending is about, you can look through there. And I think the organization with the tables were really a well-done job. So I encourage you to read that. And that would conclude my report.
At this time, members will be moving on to the Texas Department of Banking. Commissioner Rodkins.
Thank you, Chairman. Our report begins on page 33. The first report that you will see is the Bank and Trust Supervision Division Activity Report. On page 33, it's just the statistical information that we have on the various industries. Nothing abnormal that we have on this page here.
On page 34, just kind of want to point out on the problem institutions, 3, 4, and 5. Yes, the number is a little higher than previously. Their trend has been going up. However, it's nothing alarming, considering that we were at 22% in 2012. So this is not anything of a concern or an alarming event. We do anticipate that the numbers will start to trend back downward. Correct, Gary? On page 35, at the top, upper left-hand corner on the enforcement actions, just kind of wanted to point out that there is an increase in correspondence on bank safety and soundness, but this is all related to our problem banks, so the number increasing is related to that other chart. On the lower part of 35, you will see our compliance with examination priorities. For the first quarter, the information, first 2 months of the quarter are listed there. We continue to have problem IT shops, so that kind of is impacting the percentage of compliance, but we are continuing to work on it. None of the examinations are beyond 30 days late, so I want to point that out. On page 36, one thing to note here is the special operations and conferences. We continue to participate in a variety of conferences and are active in the industry, making sure that we are participating and are receiving any information that the entities need, and also providing enough information at the webinars and as panelists and also as presenters. On page 37 is the corporate division's activities report. Again, this is general statistical information through year end. Nothing of major change there. On page 38, just to point out under divisional highlights, we did have significant applications that were filed, and we had one withdrawal, a larger conversion that just did not convert. So just wanted to point that out. And on page 39 is the non-depository supervision activities report. And I'd like to ask Jesse Salcio to come up and give his report.
Good morning, members. For the record, Jesse Salcio, Farm to Banking. So on page 39, you will notice that that's where our division report starts. One of the things that I would like to point out is that the format has been, the presentation of the information has changed since the last report. A couple of things for that, you know, just to provide some consistency within the divisional reports, the other ones that are provided. And also, I think it will provide a better, illustrate some trends and analysis going forward. So that's the reason why we made the change. So on page 39, the first thing that you will notice, there's two graphs in there. And basically, this is outlining the information for money transmitters. Money transmitters are your traditional companies that send money, money remittances. There's also money order companies, that kind of stuff. And obviously, centralized currency exchange platforms as well. So these are companies that all the various type of companies fall into this category. This information is as of 8/31. At the next meeting, we'll update it as of 11/30. But at this point, you know, there's basically, you know, the volume is reported on the bottom end, the last graph there, with about $94.2 billion for one quarter there. So we do have a lot of companies that are doing a lot of business here in Texas. And this is all Texas activity, okay? And we have 163 money transmitters as of 8/31. And if we go to page 40, on the top is some of the information for currency exchanges. So again, just to illustrate, we have about 22 of those as of 8/31, about $235 million for the one quarter. Right underneath that is our other non-depository area that our division regulates, and that's perpetual care cemeteries. So those are cemeteries out there that are corporate owned typically and are licensed with our department. There's 245 of those as of 8/31. And with that, there's about approximately $480 million on deposit. So that's when every time you buy a perpetual care plot, percentage of that sale goes into a restricted trust fund. And that's representing that amount there. So 245 is about 480. The other area is prepaid funeral contract sellers. That's on the bottom of page four. There are 329 PFCs as of 8/31 with an estimated amount of $4.8 billion in deposit there. So those are, if you buy a prepaid funeral contract or a funeral home and so forth, that's how much we have on deposit. That's both on the trust fund and in insurance. So on the insurance side, it's a basically a policy funding that contract. Yeah, I'll go on to page 41. Here where we have the MSB, this is both MSBs, money transmitters and currency exchangers. And here we're gonna start, we're illustrating how many of those are 3, 4, and 5 rated. There's about 26% of all of our MSBs are in the fall in this category. And you will see that there's the numbers, 39 are threes, and then the other ones are gonna be, the red is 4 and 5, or this, you have a color, otherwise a smaller bar is a 4 and 5 rating. So together about 26 there. Same analysis on the other pages, on the next, I'm sorry, the next graphs on the same page. You will notice that the actual number of PSC and PCCs in this categories are less, right? So there's fewer overall percentage-wise, 4% and 9% compared to the 26. You know, we've talked about MSPs for a lot of commission, a lot of the meetings, more complex, there's more issues there. So that's why that area has really expanded a lot. So that's where we spend a lot of our time in our division, overseeing the MSPs. Then we'll go to page 42. Here, the 1130 numbers, like I said, we haven't finalized those. We'll have them ready for the next exam, for the next meeting, or maybe even exam. Sorry. And then other than that, the divisional highlights, we are currently going to post have additional postings for vacancies we have in the MSP area. So we're going to work through that. We had one prior, and we were able to hire one. We're off of one job offer there. But we do have at least three or four more vacancies. And I continue to kind of be part of the MSP joint meetings with other state regulators, as the last bullet point points out. We continue to be a part of those and make sure that we are coordinating regulatory and supervisor activities of the larger MSPs. Any questions or comments?
Members? Just a question, this kind of for the future new bills. If new things come in and regulations on crypto, fall under you, or do we know where that will fall under and forward, or
yes,
if that changes?
Yes, we track that, right? Anything that relates to crypto, because right now what we regulate is stable coins only. But chapter 160, if they're a licensed entity under our regulation, chapter 160 came effective 2 years ago now, I guess, or a year, 2 years ago, now requires us to look at everything that one licensed entity, and that includes all crypto. All types of cryptocurrency. So yes, to answer your question, the answer is yes, we track it and we have to determine if it applies to us or not.
And it also depends on the legislation if it assigns it to the department. So
right.
That as well.
Right.
I think there'll be a lot of movement this year. Both in Washington and in Boston.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of the crypto the caps and the volume has exploded since the election, and it continues to go up. So
but we're hoping not, so
thank you.
Yes. All right, we're moving on to our Human Resource Division's activity report, and I'm going to ask Pam Pennington to please give her report.
Morning, members. Pam Pennington, Human Resources Manager for the Department of Banking. On page 43 of your materials, you'll find the Department's Human Resources Divisional Report. On December 1st, the DOB had 8 active postings, seeking applications, and 3 postings in a selection or field status. Since the date of this report, we have successfully onboarded 2 individuals, an MSB examiner, as Jesse mentioned, and then an examination procedure and policy liaison. In addition, we have extended an offer to a returning commissioned examiner, which was accepted earlier this month. The department had about 193 employees at the end of fiscal 24, Considering our recent hires and our employee count, our employee count has increased to 195. Overall, for fiscal year 25, the department has welcomed 5 new hires, but unfortunately lost 3. As we look forward into the new year, we are excited to note that spring career fair selection has begun. As previously reported, we intend to recruit a 3rd round of entry-level examiners in the beginning of 25, and also plan to host a 3rd training class of approximately 12 to 14 entry-level examiners. Based on feedback received from the last 2 classes, we decided this next group of examiners will be significantly smaller. That allowed the department to focus on individualized training needs of those examiners. As we progress through the year, while our entry-level examiners continue to train and develop, we're going to navigate our focus to the recruitment and selection, or recruitment and retention of our journey-level and senior-level examination staff with the goals of closing the gap of our employment classification levels.
I've got a question for you, Pam. When you're talking to these potential candidates, are they wanting to work from home? Is that a pretty high demand for these folks?
Yes and no. It just kind of depends of the position in which they're applying for. There is a expectation that that will be an option, but we just make sure that our communication is clear from the get-go that, you know, everybody kind of has that 6-month probationary period to get their feet wet before we start allowing work from home opportunities.
And without going into too many details, the individuals that were hired and left soon thereafter, was that part of the problem?
No, those were just entry-level voluntary separation.
Okay. Thank you.
What is the policy, though?
Our policy is that within the first 6 months during your probationary period, you're learning your job, you're getting to know the department. So your work from home status is not, you're not eligible until you're released from probation. And then you're eligible to work from home after that.
As the state, the governor's office has put a position out there that they would like everyone to be returning back to office full time at least 4 days a week. And you can work that out with your direct supervisors if you have any other. And then there's certainly obvious positions that do not require to be in the office.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely positions that don't lend for a work from home status. And we review each one of those kind of at the beginning while we're posting. So we make sure the communication is clear from the get-go.
We're also in the middle of updating our work at home policy to be very, very clear on the different attributes that are required in order to be eligible. And making sure that it's clear to staff that you do have to return to work. There is not a position that's work at home 100% that doesn't really exist.
Any other questions, members? Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Alrighty, on page 46 is the Strategic Support Divisional Report. The first few pages are related to the consumer activity. Very nominal. It's the first 2 months of the year, of the fiscal year being reported. Nothing unusual at this time. And as far as the quarterly numbers, those have not been finalized and will be provided at the next meeting. On page 52 is the bank and trust, the testing for the commissioning information. This area is obviously picked up. We've got a lot of new younger staff who are moving through the process, and we have existing staff that are readily going through the process very quickly. The last meeting, we did a chart, a bucket chart, if you will, of showing you the different levels and where everyone is at. We have approximately 19 people in the pipeline right now just for the commissioning, and we will probably get a few more entering into the cycle. So we will probably be at the 20 mark, somewhere in there, for individuals in the process. First quarter was a 1 commissioned examiner. Earlier this month, actually this week, we commissioned an examiner, so we're slowly starting to creep the pace up. We anticipate that for the fiscal year, we'll probably have 5 to 6 newly commissioned individuals, so that's progress on our part. We have about 15 different phase panels that are scheduled already through July. I'm sure by the end of the fiscal year, we'll probably ramp that up closer to 20, so. A lot of activity there and a lot of individuals rearing up to become commissioned. So that's very positive for us. On page 53, you will find just a litany of different things that are fall under this particular division. We are still waiting for the Conference of State Bank Supervisors to provide us notification of our accreditation. They're a little bit behind, but we anticipate receiving that soon. Let's see here.
On page 54 is the Finance Commission webcast history. We provide this so you kind of know who all is, how many people are listening throughout your meetings and what the activity is. And we try to break that down between internal and external parties so that you're well aware of the audience that you have. And on page 55 is the Legal Division report. And I'm going to ask Robert Nichols, our general counsel, to please give his report.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and commission members. The Legal Division report will be on page 55 and 56 of your packet. Under the bank and trust supervision, one note I'll make about all of these that are dated prior to this period, these were all in conjunction with federal counterparts, and they take a little longer to publish things publicly, and so we don't want to make them public before they do, and so that's why there's a delay in reporting those. Generally, these all had to do with just general improvements we'd like to see, credit risk, board oversight, things like that. And I'll note the bullets 2 through 5 all fall under the same bank holding company. Under non-depository supervision, we had a couple here, the Morgan Funeral Hall and the Quality Surplus. Those fall under the prepaid funeral contracts, like Mr. Saucio mentioned earlier. There's restitution and penalties there. Kraken is a pretty large cryptocurrency related company. That was one the commissioner previously mentioned to you. It's on our website if you want to go read what's going on there. But it was primarily unauthorized change of control. There's a penalty applying to that one. And then Alliance Payroll was a pretty large penalty for unauthorized money transmission. Penalty on that was $212,000. So they've been doing that for little bit of a long time. Under gifts, as always, these are not problematic. These are permitted under the rules, but we just report those to you just out of an abundance of caution. And then, before moving on, that's all I have for the Legal Division report. Are there any questions? Okay. And then beginning on page 57 of your packet, we've started tracking prepaid bills here. Some of that's been mentioned already, so I won't belabor the point. But these are some that potentially will affect the Finance Commission as a whole. And so we're tracking these. As Wendy said, we will you'll get updates once the session starts weekly on bills that affect us. And we're tracking others that potentially affect the department as well.
For our new members, this is just a trickling thing that session begins. It's going to be a very large volume of information coming at you. So we rely heavily on the staff at the three agencies to decipher which ones we need to focus on. And then if it's something that we really need to focus on, we'll bring it up, obviously, and have a discussion. You're going to see a high number of these starting to pour in, and just don't be overwhelmed.
Right. But as always, if these are here, so, you can take a look, and if you have questions, we'll be here to answer them. So that's all I have as far as that topic as well.
Any questions, members? Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. And Chairman, that concludes the Department of Banking.
Thank you for stepping in today, Commissioner.
Of course.
We'll now move on to Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First up on our agenda is industry status, economic highlights. Under this item, I wanted to share with you our annual publication on the availability, quality, and pricing of financial services. You should have a separate bound copy of this. We've been compiling this report for many years. We're required to prepare this report by statute. There's several statutory mandates that we are fulfilling when we compile this report. So much of what is in here contains a compilation of the annual reports that are provided by our regulated industries. And so we compile all that information to prepare some aggregate information that can be used to try to ascertain some of the trends in the industry. It also compares financial products. It highlights some emerging products and some low-cost lending programs, spotlights a number of economic indicators and trends that give us some context for what's going on in the financial markets in Texas. And we like to, look at those broader market lending standards, which affect more of the marginal or subprime borrowers, what's happening with delinquency rates and sensitivity to interest rates. All of those, of course, have affected the financial markets. Beginning on page 24 is a section that contains a lot of data relating to some national trends on sale and financing of motor vehicles. Some of these are kind of, I usually try to give you a few points at the beginning of my report each meeting, but that's, these are the types of indicators that I usually report on those bi-monthly meetings. We've already provided this report. It's due September, it's due December the 1st, sorry. We've already provided it to the legislative leadership as required. It's posted on our website, but we're pleased to provide it to you. We're really proud of the report. I'm proud of it. I think it's really well done and contains some important information about the Texas financial services market. I've already heard some positive feedback about it from one of our trade groups. I would like to extend my appreciation and compliments to Carl Huventhal. Carl, you can wave back there. And his team, including Lee Hendry, for their good work in the preparation of this report. And we would be happy to answer any questions, or really Carl would be happy to answer any questions if you have any about the report.
As the consumer credit member of the Finance Commission, this is very well received, so thank you for doing this.
Hopefully it's useful to somebody, right? You go to a lot of effort for some of these reports, and you hope somebody reads it, right? So, okay, moving on to the material in the book, starting on page 67, is our Consumer Protection and Consumer Assistance Report. So there's information in here about our exam activities. Again, we're only just reporting a few months. You don't have first quarter reports yet. We've been doing some very purposeful selection of the types of examinations that we're doing this, have done this first quarter. Try to really work on some training opportunities and very specifically selecting the types of exams we want to do, also for bulking up production in particular areas as we move to implementing, migrating to NMLS and to the state examination system. So that's reported on here. We are lagging a little bit behind on our pro rata production, but we expect to catch up on that. We also get some information in here about our training activities and our June examiner class that we hired last June, and the work they're doing to get certified, and they'll be starting to get certified in two new levels of examinations that they hadn't previously been working on. That starts in January. And then, as you heard, you know, the spring is coming and we're all starting on our recruitment and selection for our next class of examiners, which we hope to start in June. The data on page 68, again, contains year over year, again, for 2 months. At the bottom of 68, the acceptable level of compliance, you see that the motor vehicle sales finance has dropped below our 85% satisfactory benchmark. That's numbers already bumped up into the low 80s. And I think over time, again, we're dealing with a short period of time. So I suspect that will eventually come back. We did make some great progress on investigations, though, in the first quarter. So those are up significantly year over year. On page 70 is consumer assistance. I guess it just must be a time for some decline in consumer complaints, because like you heard from Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, our consumer complaints are also down somewhat this first couple of months. A big chunk of what's down for us is non-jurisdictional complaints, so that's probably okay because we're not really within our jurisdiction. So other complaint information is here, seems kind of typical, so there's not really anything unusual to report there.
Remind us how you track the complaints. Which program do we have?
Well, most our complaints come in through ALEKS, our regulatory platform, and that's what we're using right now. The statewide examination system does have a feature for consumer complaints, and we are looking at how we might implement some of that into the future. But right now, there's a way for someone through our regulatory platform, ALEKS, they can file the complaint there. We work it there. It has workflow and so on and so forth. But they can also send an email. We take it, 800 number, we take it any way they want to send it. So.
And every licensee has a number in there. Yep. Posted in there.
Well, every contract that is subject to our jurisdiction should have a disclosure in it that contains our name, address, phone number, web address, everything, how to submit a complaint. So we'll take them any way they want to send it. Okay, page 72, moving on to licensing. There's just a quick report in there on renewals. We are in the renewal season for large number of our, we've completed the motor vehicle renewal, but a number of our other types of licenses are currently in renewal. That process, we're seeing a little bit of lag right now, and some of those renewals are regulated lenders, I think, are running a little bit behind. I hope that's just because they haven't gotten around to it yet. And our credit access businesses, I think, are running a lot behind right now. And I think we may see, you know, some companies that are surrendering some licenses. So we're going to be looking at that. We had one company that filed bankruptcy, and, you know, so we're kind of looking at a little bit of a shifting landscape there as we watch those fairly closely. Hopefully we'll see some of those that just hadn't gotten to it yet, and they'll end up maintaining that, that activity. But there is some consolidation going on in the industry overall. And again, I think that's similar trend you're seeing elsewhere here. At the bottom of page 72, there's information about our upcoming plan transition to NMLS. We're in preliminary planning to transition our property tax lenders, one of our smaller groups, in the spring. So they'll be our pilot group transitioning to NMLS. And then in the summer, we'll be looking at our regulated lender licenses moving to NMLS. So that process is beginning. Page 73 is information on financial education. Just wanted to say how much we appreciated working with the Department of Banking and working on co-hosting these webinars from time to time. We feel like we can continue to fulfill the expectation that there are some collaboration and cooperation as we work together on different initiatives that the Finance Commission has responsibility for. And information about the communication there, if you have any questions, and the types of events that we've been participating in on page 74. Human resources information on page 74 also. You'll see we've got turnover as of the end of November. We had three. I did want to note two notable upcoming departures. We have two senior examiners that are retiring at the end of this month. Eric Fancher has been with us for 16 years. He's a senior examiner in the Dallas-Fort Worth region, and he's been providing quality leadership and deep technical expertise, especially in motor vehicle sales finance, for us for 16 years, really. And Stephen Cantini has almost 26 years of service with our agency. He served as the San Antonio supervisor until 2023. Since that time, he's served in a more senior consultative role, supporting special projects, our exam review, and supporting some of the other regional supervision, and it has really supported our succession planning to prepare for this day when we were losing some of our senior staff. Steve also has provided a lot of steady exam leadership in supporting the development of examiners. So Steve and Eric both have mentored and guided many examiners throughout their careers, and they have left a lasting legacy for us at the OCCC, and we're grateful for their contributions and their dedicated service. We'll miss them, but congratulate them on their retirement and next chapter in their journey. So I just kind of wanted to mention that here today. We'll be celebrating them next week in the office. But IT is really the last item I have before I let Matt talk about legal. And I just wanted to call your attention to a project that we are working on related to the Texas Payment Engine. DIR has selected a new administrator for the Texas Payment Engine. This is I call it the payment engine, but it's the process, how most electronic payments are submitted and processed for state agencies. And so there's a new vendor that's going to be taking on that. And consequently, it requires some significant changes for those of us that have applications that take payments and hand it off to what's called either a common checkout page or a hosted payment page. But it still requires significant coding and change in our application to allow that process to happen. So we have a vendor that we work with that helps maintain our application, but it's turned out to be a much more significant project, and it has fairly aggressive timeframes associated with it. So we have a major effort going underway right now, working in our IT area to try to meet our spring timeframe to be prepared to move to the new vendor and the new payment engine process. So anyway, I just wanted you to be aware of that. It's kind of not something we knew to some extent when we were budgeting about it. When we were budgeting, we knew that this was coming, but we didn't know the full extent to which it was going to be required. So it's a significant more effort than we were expecting. So in terms of time and money, funding. So anyways, with that, that's all I have, unless there are questions on operations, and I'll ask Matt to come forward.
Just a comment from the Finance Commission. Please thank those two team members for their dedicated service to the state. That's certainly over 40 years. That's tremendous. So thank you for
Thank you for recognizing them.
All right. Good morning. Matt Nance, General Counsel, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Our legal department report starts on page 77. We currently have no cases before SOA. On enforcement case highlights, I wanted to mention we had a couple enforcement orders mentioned bottom of page 77 with motor vehicle dealers who had failed to respond to furnish information for investigations. As a kind of follow-up on that, those did result in revocation orders that have become final, revoking the licenses of those particular dealerships, and we're kind of in follow-up communication. We'll hopefully have a further update in the next report in February.
Chairman, question. Are those used car dealers or new car dealers?
I don't remember whether they were used or new. Both of them had litigation against them, one by an acceptance company. The other's actually in bankruptcy, it appears. So these came out of complaints, one from an acceptance company and one from a consumer. I guess one of them is a buy here, pay here dealer that a consumer was complaining about wrongful repossession of, and that one appears to be in bankruptcy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. So like I said, those both resulted in license revocations, and we should have more of an update in February. Looking at page 79, the Ernest Polk case, this is a case we've updated you on recently. This was an employment lawsuit against the agency. The Court of Appeals did rule in the agency's favor and agreed with the trial court's dismissing of the case. The plaintiff did not appeal that case to or request a rehearing by the deadlines for doing so. There was some follow-up correspondence with the court, but we're currently waiting for the Court of Appeals to issue its mandate confirming that the ruling is final and dismissing the case. Page 79 and 80, we mentioned some rulemaking by the federal CFPB. There's been a lot of rulemaking activity by the CFPB.
And litigation activity that follows.
And litigation coming out of the rulemaking. That's a lot of information coming in. We're taking stock of it. They're on the payday lending rule litigation. There was a kind of notice or a document issued by the Fifth Circuit reiterating the March 30th, 2025 effective date for that rule. We'll kind of wait and see what the plaintiffs do with that case if they try to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. We mentioned two other rulemakings by the CFPB, and then there was yet another one last week on regarding data brokers, proposed rulemaking to limit data broker selling consumer information. So we may have more for you next time as we learn more about CFPB rulemaking. Advisory guidance, we mentioned as of when we prepared this report, we had no official interpretation requests. We got a request a couple weeks ago, or I guess just before Thanksgiving, relating to motor vehicle substitute insurance, kind of the if you have a buy here, pay here car dealership, and the consumer fails to provide required insurance, kind of what substitute insurance products is that dealer allowed to place on the car. So we did get a request related to that issue that may result in a bulletin. We're still taking stock of that request and determining how to proceed. And last item I wanted to point out on the legal report, on page 80, public information, we had some information that we had submitted to the Department of Information Resources about automated decision systems that wound up being part of a request that DIR got. And we were expecting a decision from the Attorney General's office on the like a letter ruling on that referral on public information and whether that information could be withheld. There was an estimated ruling date in early December. We still haven't seen that ruling. We're looking out for it just to see how the AG rules, what parts of that are confidential. So we're staying tuned on that. So those were the items I had on the legal report, and happy to answer any questions before moving on to the legislative issues, if there are any.
Any questions, members?
Okay. So legislative issues on pages 81 and 82, we have an outline. Before the start of the legislative session, we kind of try to take stock about possible issues that we have identified in the statute. That kind of includes the strategic plan process, has a space for looking at redundancies and impediments in statute. So this outline just has two of the issues that we had identified and might be looking at during the session. One is data security. This is a crucial ongoing issue we're looking at. Something we identified in the strategic plan and here in this outline would be, could we add some language to the finance code that would explicitly include enforceable information security requirements and an explicit requirement to report data breaches to our agency for regulated entities. So that was kind of data security. The other one has to do, Commissioner has mentioned the NMLS transition. NMLS is an online platform used by all 50 states for licensing, used by state financial regulatory agencies to license financial service providers. It's already used for mortgage companies. It's increasingly used for consumer finance companies. We already have a section of the finance code that talks about, moving license groups onto NMLS, but some possible legislation might make it more explicit that applies to the different license and registration types that we regulate.
I think the current language is discretionary. It allows it, but it doesn't necessarily... is inclusive enough to include everybody, and we just want to make sure that that's explicit.
It currently includes the groups the commissioner mentioned earlier that we're looking at for next year, but that could be helpful in the future. So those are two legislative issues. As Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez mentioned earlier, in January we'll start sending out a report of the core legislation being tracked. That's kind of the core legislation that really directly affects our regulated industries and our agency. In looking at pre-filed bills, we've identified about three bills filed so far that directly affect credit access business and payday lending, three on home equity, one on motor vehicle sales finance. Those would be included in kind of that core report. We would also be tracking, in addition to that, the numerous other bills that might have indirect effects or more general effects, monitoring those to see, what we might need to do after the end of the legislative session.
Such as many bills that are affecting rulemaking. We'll be tracking those on a separate track. So those probably won't be in our weekly reports to you necessarily, although I think they might be in the other agencies' report. but we have those on a separate track because we usually, we get a lot of other bills that affect our direct area. So try to keep that report sort of streamlined.
So any questions about legislation, legislative issues?
Well, item number three, is that where we're at now?
That's where yes. we are.
So we have one rule item for your consideration. It is item D3, and it starts on page 88 of the materials. These are proposed amendments to the OCCC's rule on registration with NMLS. So we've talked about the NMLS transition, as mentioned, the Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System, or NMLS, is an online platform used by state agencies to license financial service providers. It was established by state agencies in 2008. All 50 states use it in some form to license individual residential mortgage loan originators. And it's also widely used to license companies providing residential mortgage loans and increasingly used to license consumer finance companies as well. And as Commissioner mentioned, during calendar year 2025, the OCCC intends to begin moving licensing groups to NMLS from our current licensing system, ALEX. We believe this is an important project for improving user experience and promoting efficiency, especially for those companies that might hold licenses with more than one agency so they can manage their licenses in one platform. So the proposed rule change we've got is fairly straightforward. It would remove a sentence that states that entities that make, transact, or negotiate residential mortgage loans are not required to register with NMLS. The change would support the OCCC's efforts to work on migrating license groups to NMLS. And we have other technical changes to section 2.102 to renumber the other subsections accordingly. As far as the process goes, in November, we sent out a pre-comment draft of the proposed amendments. We held a webinar for stakeholders where we were able to answer some stakeholder questions. We didn't receive any written pre-comments from stakeholders on the rule changes. So that's the summary of the proposed amendments in our process. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, members? If not, do I hear? I'm sorry.
So any other feedback from other staff? I mean, not clearly not written, but any feedback from stakeholders, questions, or concerns?
We had two stakeholders at the webinar ask some questions. I think they were mainly about kind of confirming what's going on here, which is the, NMLS is the existing platform for the individual loan officers and loan originators to get licensed. And this is affecting the kind of at the company level, that the companies, instead of, going on the our current platform, ALEX, to update and renew their licenses, would be renewing through NMLS.
And what's the number of entities that it affects?
So the first group, the property tax lenders, is probably around 35 to 40. They hold about less than 100 licenses total because you license by location. But the company, so they may have multiple locations, right? So there's about probably 35-ish companies for the property tax lenders for the first group. Second group is the regulated lenders. That's a lot larger group. I think they're somewhere in the neighborhood around 600 to 800 companies, maybe up to 1,000, but quite a few more locations. But most of those, we've tried to look at some overlap of how many of them, operate in other states, and they're already on the system. And so this makes it easier for them to manage them in the same place, because if they operate in other states, many of them are already there.
What does it cost to sign up for NMLS?
There's a, Matt, you did some work on the processing fees, but.
Yeah, we mentioned this a little bit in the preamble. We understand there's a setup fee, and depending on kind of, if they are a mortgage company that has multiple originators, there may be a couple additional fees. I think we're talking about in the between $100 and $200 range for this sign up.
Yeah. The Savings Mortgage Lending uses it for all of their mortgage companies.
Right.
The Department of Banking uses it for their money services businesses. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty commonly used. And we use it for the individual licensed mortgage loan originators right now, but the companies have not been moved over.
Any other questions, members?
Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7TAC Part 1, Chapter 2 concerning residential mortgage loan originators regulated by the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner?
Marty Green, so moved.
Second.
Tory Lambert, second.
Thank you very much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's all right.
That concludes our report.
Any other comments, members? Just follow back up with Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez about the upcoming meeting dates. Please look at those for your hotel rooms. Commissioner Romano will put you up in the kids' bunk room if you don't find a hotel. And he just told me that it will be a bottom bunk, so those of us with bad hips, we appreciate it. But if there's no further business, everybody have a happy holidays. If you're traveling, please be safe. And no further business discussed. It is now 10:16, and the mission is now adjourned.
What a turn again.
I know. Bottom.